Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, late in the first quarter, we got, look at this. Mason Rudolph always thought he could play for the Steelers. None of us did. But he's in right now for Will Levis, who looks to be okay. He's warming up. Scoreless game, 2 minutes left in the first, Dolphins and Titans. We got, I like Lions fans. I feel like we're kindred spirits, whatever that term is, because they've had a lot of years like the Jets. So we got some Lions fans out here. We're getting ready for Lions and Seahawks. Hopefully the, there's a 12. I won't tell them that annoys the crap out of me, but there's a 12. It's a whole table of Seattle people. Okay. All right. It's building up here. Front yard, Ellis Island. They got the $7 bites, $7 drinks. Up until 6, you can get an all-you-can-drink or all-you-can-drink beer, all-you-can-eat for a low price. The menu here is awesome. Willie and I are ravaging our way through it. And, of course, today's Mega Monday. You buy one, you get one. 50-ounce mega cocktails, mega mosa, mega Mary, mega sangria, and punch drunk. Let's do that. A little banana whiskey, coconut rum, pineapple, orange, pomegranates. Can I follow up on what Scott Bemis was just saying? From Fresno. Fresno State gets slaughtered, pounded physically by the Rebels. And I'm so glad Scott brought up the money moving forward for Fresno and for San Diego State, but especially Fresno. And I feel like not many people examine the Mountain West decision. By that, I mean sticking with it by UNLV, and looked at the money swing, right? Having to pay $18 million plus to get out of the Mountain West Conference to go to a Pac-12 that may not be any better versus being fawned over and bonused by the Mountain West Conference to the tune of probably 20-plus million, if not more, and what that means to the budgets. And now we'll examine this. Texas State's been invited by the Mountain West Conference. This also feels like trust in the new Mountain West leadership, because old Mountain West leadership was not very active. Kind of let everything happen in front of them, right? The conference get picked apart. Schools going to Power 5, and Mountain West's like, oh, we'll take whoever we can get. And now they're trying to go out, and last week we saw the story, NIU, Toledo, Texas State. Like, they're trying to be aggressive.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we have this conversation last week about UNLV with somebody? Was it with Justin? But the exit fee, if the Pac-12 is picking up those fees for them,
I don't.
Then they would miss out. Then they would slowly pay it back by not getting part of the TV deal for X amount of years.
I think the latest with that was they would get the full TV part of it. But the problem is the Washington State and Oregon State only have so much money. So if they have to pay out these exit fees, I still think phase two of their plan is going to be, all right, Memphis and South Florida and Tulane and UTSA, here's $20 million apiece to help with your exit fees. Like, at some point, their money's going to run out.
Right.
I don't think there's going to be a difference between the conferences. I think we're going to look back on this and go, this was really stupid.
Yes.
Why not just make a mega West Coast conference?
100%.
You know, including some, you know, some Southeast, Central Time, Mountain Time, and have 18 teams.
I agree, because
all this money's going around. What's the point?
Right now, by the looks of it, who are the last two? It was you got Washington State, Oregon State, you got the four from Mountain West.
Five. Utah State joined too.
Five. Utah State.
So they only have seven members.
They
need to get
they didn't grab the other two. Okay. So right now, it looks like last year when we were saying, why doesn't Oregon State, Washington State just join the Mountain West? In reality, it looks like a Mountain West. I agree with you. They should just make a major West Coast conference.
I think it's too late now. You got lawsuits.
No,
it's
not, it's not going to happen now. But I'm just saying that's what they should have done.
Thievery claims. It's pretty wild.
It's 100% what they should have done.
Let's bring in R.J. Clifford on the Raiders, and we got a big fight card coming up with UFC in Salt Lake. R.J., how you doing, buddy?
You know, a lot better after a Raiders win that you didn't expect, right? The two best players on the team out, AP saying players are making business decisions. They're about to make a business decision. Am I going to have to keep following this team this season? And, of course, when no one thinks they've got anything going is when they show up. Of course. It's the most Raider way ever.
Yeah. Totally unpredictable. Well, let's get to some positives. First of all, on defense, You know, you're down Max Crosby. I thought a lot of the guys who have kind of been, you know, on the two line and every once in a while a one, I thought a bunch of guys stepped up and played really well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the obvious, right? Robert Spillane has gotten at least 10 tackles. He's in double-digit tackles every single game. He had 12 tackles. He had 11 last week, 11 before, 10 in the opener. I mean, the guy's the most – Max Crosby's the heart and soul, but Robert Spillane is the most productive player on the defense, no question. He's everywhere. And I know, like, you know, hot punter talk is just great for ratings, but A.J. Cole needs to be given credit for how well this defense is playing. Six punts, two within the 20, no touchbacks. He had a 67-yarder, averaging 58 per. I mean, every single game, the opposing offense has to go the entire length of the field if A.J. Cole's punting, and that's just been a big part of it. But it was the new faces, right? Isaiah Polamalu looked absolutely fantastic. Charles Snowden, out of nowhere, is now producing. I mean, it just goes to show you, man, like, sometimes it just takes, you know, some of your leaders going away for everyone to kind of just, like, feel it. Because, like, last week, without Max Crosby playing, like, everything imploded. Like, no one was able to go along with it when he was off the field or not playing well. But credit to Antonio Pierce. We were talking last week, right? If you can't motivate this team, if you can't motivate your players, why the hell are you here? You're not a defensive genius, offensive genius, tons of experience, in-game, brilliant game manager. You're a motivator. And it worked. I mean, he was pretending like that business decision comment was a distraction and, you know, it was a problem. It worked. You have Caleb on Chase on making plays, Adam Butler making plays. Like, don't tell me those guys just learned how to play football overnight. I mean, Antonio Pierce got this team up when he needed to.
And, you know, in the case of Caleb on, you take a chance on guys who have a pedigree. Sometimes they don't turn out at multiple stops, and maybe they've nailed something here.
Maybe, again, one game. But we've seen guys, like, again, I bring up Robert Spillane again, just, you know, kind of a whatever dude. And now he's, like, second or third in tackles in the NFL. He's going to get a huge contract, you know, when, you know, at some point this season or at the end of this season. You know, he's gotten the most out of Max, and Patrick Graham knows how to scheme these guys, but it's been the motivation of Antonio Pierce. And it's been the Raider way for a long time, right? Guys either, again, very, very Raiders. Guys are either amazing, we give them a ton of money, and they flame out here, or we pick them up off the scrap heap and turn them into Pro Bowlers.
That is crazy how the trend of being the kind of the Father Flanagans and finding the reclamation projects, they're still pretty decent at that now, but they can't freaking pick in the first round. Although that said, maybe, just maybe, Tyree showed some signs yesterday.
He flashed. It's about time. Like, I feel like Raider Nation was pretty patient with him last year. I mean, he was drafted as a project to begin with, and then he had the injured foot, didn't have a preseason, none of that. Okay, it's like, all right, you've got last year, you get a mulligan. You get one season mulligan. As you're a seventh overall, that's being very, very generous. And yeah, like, you just didn't really produce this season. But again, if you're following around Max Crosby everywhere, you've got some great leadership, you've got a defensive-minded coach, you've got Patrick Graham was, I think, you know, top five defensive coordinators in the NFL. Like, you've got everything going for you, Tyree. If you can't make it work, there's some major problems.
RJ Clifford is with us from the Autumn Windbags, and he's one of the hosts, longtime host on SiriusXM's Combat Channel, UFC expert especially. The run game, that's another thing to get encouraged by. Listen, they're not setting records, but it was so bad the first 3 weeks. To get 152 on the ground, that's a step in the right direction. And I also like that Luke Getsy is not stuck in one way, you know, which is just keep feeding and trying to go between the tackles. You had to try some new things, and the end arounds turned out to be really valuable wrinkles.
The game ball goes to Luke Getsy. It doesn't go to Tyree. It doesn't go to Spillane. It doesn't go to Minshew. It doesn't go to Matt. It goes to Luke Getsy. Not only did he turn everything around creative, like, that hasn't been Getsy's MO. His problem has always been, all right, here's my scheme. Here's my setup. You do plan A, and that sets up plan B, and that sets up plan C, and then you just stick to it, right? Here's my regimen, and here's how it works. He hasn't been that creative. And he was awesome. Like you mentioned, as many rushing yards in this game as he did, like, the rest of the season combined-ish, you had, what, three receivers and a tight end get carries, two rushing touchdowns from receivers, as end-arounds, like you mentioned. And, you know, let's call a spade, guys. The time of Zamir White being RB1, it lasted four games last season, and 3.5 games this season. It's got to be Madison at the backfield moving forward. It's got to be.
Well, and you mentioned it's funny you bring Getsy up because, I mean, I agree with you in terms of his entire plan, but the trickery has to be was sort of the catalyst, wouldn't you say, for a little bit on the – was it with Tucker?
Tucker and Turner.
Yeah, that double reverse.
The first one I'm saying. The first one, yeah, the reverse with Tucker. Because, I mean, they were down 10-0 at the time, and it sort of just it sort of sparked them, if you will. Just it's the dramatics of a play like that, and it you know, gives them a jolt of confidence.
Yeah, when it works, right? When it works, you're a genius, and you get that spark, and things get going. You're like, oh, yeah, Getsy. He's got it all figured out. He had his Wheaties this morning, right? But I mean, look, it's kind of in a weird position, right? Because if you're Getsy and your quarterback's playing, you know, I know he was getting a lot of yardage and a great completion percentage for a while, but he was turning the ball over like crazy. Nothing explosive. When you're at this position where nothing's working, like, you get to try anything, you know? It's like a fighter who's down 4-0 in the fifth. Like, okay, you went crazy and you got knocked out, but you had to try something, right? So Getsy's like, all right, the gloves are off, Getsy. Like, get wild, get crazy. This run game's got to work. You got limited, you know, a lot of limitations out of your quarterback. Your number one receiver's not playing this week, and who knows what's going to happen with his future. It's like, get wild, get crazy, Getsy, or get out your resume.
One of the things I liked about Antonio Pierce's press conference yesterday, he could have backpedaled, he could have sidestepped in terms of the business decisions comment, you know, well, what I really meant was, he could have, you know, but he straight up apologized in creating quote-unquote hoopla and took accountability. And he added to it, he didn't just apologize for creating hoopla with that comment and sort of the media grabbing hold of it and running with it. He actually said creating distractions. I mean, he sort of fleshed out the issues that it could have caused, and I thought that was kind of big of him.
You know, every now and then I got to remind myself, like, we see these press conferences, and it's, you know, for either media or fans or whoever, and you're like, oh, they're that's for us. It's a press conference. It's for the press. For a lot of these coaches, it's for his team. It's for his players. Like, he's talking to media. He's talking to beat writers. He's talking to cameras. But all he cares about is what his players think or ownership, right? Like, that's who he answers to. Is his players and his owner. He doesn't care what we think. It doesn't matter to him, really. So he uses his platform to be like, hey, guys, you know, I came down hard on you. It was my bad. You know, me, Malo. Sorry, guys. Like, but it worked, right? Like, what a great message for your team when, you know, this quote-unquote, you know, the worst thing that can happen to a team is a distraction, right? It's almost like a swear word. Oh, the distraction. I've been told it's this terrible thing. It's like, well, it worked. It worked. And AP was big enough to not, you know, to say like, oh, I apologize for making it such a big thing. When it could have been like, yeah, media, yeah, windbags, yeah, everybody who was saying, you know, why am I here? I don't deserve this. It's like, yeah, in your face. But really, he was just like, no, what RJ thinks doesn't matter. It's what Max and Devontae and Spillane and Madison, and they heard what they wanted to hear.
RJ Clifford wrapping the Raiders game. He is from the Windbags, the Autumn Windbags podcast. He's on Cofield and Company as we're live here. Getting ready for the second kickoff on a Monday. A bunch of Lions and Seahawks fans are here. It's Ellis Island front yard. All right. Let's look to the future here.
Yep.
They've had such a good time against the Broncos. But Denver has shown some signs the last two games. Maybe it was the opponent. The Jets were dreadful yesterday. What's the expectation against the Donkeys and what do they have to do?
Well, look, it's been, I believe, 8 wins in a row for the Raiders, right? 4 straight seasons of sweeping the Donkeys. And there's been some highs and some lows. We can always count on W's over those guys in Denver. I kind of just see it continuing, right? We've proven we can play without our two best players. You know, Bo Nix, is he going to throw for 50 yards again? Like, is he going to be that terrible? Or, you know, their defense is super overrated. I think Sean Payton's still kind of figuring out what he's got over there. Again, every time we get comfortable as Raider Nation is when we tend to stumble. But what are you afraid of in Denver? Like, when you're scheming up your defense and offense, where are you? Like, what keeps you up at night? What are you trembling about? I mean, the Raiders obviously haven't been spectacular by any means, but if Max is back, that'll leave an offensive coordinator up at night. Devontae and Brock Bowers both healthy. You cannot cover both guys. It's not possible. You can't do it. And now you're not just scheming against a run offense where it's like, all right, we just keep a real light box that can't run no matter what. Now you've got, all right, now they're going to do misdirection. Now they're going to do end arounds. Now they had seven guys carry the football. Like, you've got homework now if you're the Broncos.
I'm going to give you one name as to why you can credit the Raiders for winning in Denver this week.
Okay.
Andy Dalton. Because if there was ever a letdown that nobody expected after going into Baltimore and putting together a second half run in an incredible fourth quarter, the Raiders were not supposed to lose to Carolina. They are not about to, or they shouldn't, let another letdown infiltrate practice, their locker room, and a game this Sunday against a division opponent. So you can thank Andy Dalton for that.
Let's hope so. And I don't want to come out here and be like negative Nancy every time. But if you're the Raiders and you're 1-1 and you get one upset win and all of a sudden you're setting yourself up for trap games and you're too big for your britches, I don't know if that's going to be cured with one bad loss. Like, I don't know if that's going to be cured with one. But to your point, that was a wake-up call. And AP was able to straighten out his team at least for one game against a terrible Browns team.
RJ Clifford with us. Okay, I want to talk some fighting. RJ, of course, one of the stars of SiriusXM Combat Channel. First of all, this is, I always like to bring up kind of deep stuff with you because we have good conversations like this. The audience might not know it. Like, the audience might not even know that Jerry Cooney has been doing radio. You sent out the note, congrats to Randy Gordon, former commish in New York, and Jerry Cooney for going into the Atlantic City Hall of Fame. Can you speak to how cool both of those guys are?
They're great. The beautiful thing, and like, boxing is, you know, you kind of think of it's kind of like the old guy sport a little bit, right? Like, your dad loved it and your uncles are super into it. And, you know, there's enough reason for any young guy to get into boxing these days. It's been awesome. Thank you for that Saudi money, guys. We really appreciate it, putting the matchups together. But they are the ultimate, like, listening to your uncles talk boxing guys. Obviously, Jerry Cooney, you know, heavyweight title challenger. Randy Gordon was the New York State boxing commissioner for 9 years. Like, he knows Mike Tyson as well as anybody. And just hearing those two dudes, just old guy boxing, is awesome. It's great. It's like the boxing audio version of watching like your grandma and grandpa feed ducks at the park. It's just heartwarming listening to them talk. It's great. I love those guys.
Salt Lake. Have you been to Salt Lake?
Many times.
Oh yeah,
anytime.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forgot you. Your background does lead back to Salt Lake. So I'll speak nicely of Utah. Actually, I like Salt Lake. I always like to use the word. It's very provincial, but I just mean they have bars. And now that I think they serve the full bore on the alcohol, which probably makes you happy. Although you're not allowed to say that. This card is interesting on a lot of fronts. First of all, I think potentially the next big star in female fighting is on the card. Or am I getting too excited about Kayla Harrison?
I think you should be excited about Kayla Harrison, because when it comes to like new up and coming women, she's the one, right? 17-1, beat Holly Holm in her UFC debut. So she was fighting for the Professional Fighters League forever. She was the highest paid to like star pack ratio to star power of any fighter out there. She was getting paid between $3 and $5 million a year from the PFL. She wasn't this like massive pay-per-view draw. She wasn't this ratings bonanza. She was just this two-time Olympic gold medalist with judo who just crushed everybody in mixed martial arts. She's bigger, right? 135 is pretty much the biggest active weight class in the UFC. They still have 145ers, but they're just kind of dabbling. She was fighting at 145 and 155. She was a big girl. So people were wondering, like, can she even make it to the UFC? Can she even come here? And props to her for saying, like, look, she could have easily stayed in the PFL, crushed, bloated 135ers as she was 155, being a minus 2,000 favorite every time, made millions of dollars every year, and never risk getting hurt or lose him. She said, no, I want to be world champion. I want to be taken seriously as the greatest fighter in the world, and I have to be in the UFC to do that. So she said, bye-bye PFL, came to the UFC. I don't know what she's getting paid, but I guarantee it's a pay cut. Until she gets, you know, that belt and pay-per-view dollars and, you know, all the extra stuff that comes with being a UFC champion. But she's got it all, man. The record, the physique. She's super willing to do the media. If you reached out to the UFC this week and said we want to talk to her, she would do it, despite the fact she's preparing for a number one contender fight. She's everything you want in a potential superstar.
How good is the Rocky Pennington Juliana Pena fight going to be?
Well, I appreciate you slightly sipping in the sarcasm and not making it super blatant, but I will say that. So Rocky Pennington has gotten a rap, and fairly so, of a fighter that just goes to decision. She kind of flourished at the right time. Amanda Nunes retired, the best female fighter of all time, queen of the 135-pound division. And then when she left, Raquel Pennington just kind of happened to be on a win streak, beat the right girls at the right time. And now here she is, champion at 36 years old, which is ancient by female fighting standards. But she just kept figuring it out, and she's unapologetic about it. You ask her, like, hey, are you going to fight more exciting, get more fans? She's like, I don't care what they think. I'm just here to win. Juliana Pena is the personality on the other side. She's very loud, very in your face, also a grappling heavy style. But really, I mean, it's kind of like the semifinals right now. Caitlin Vieira is fighting Kayla Harrison. Raquel Pennington's fighting Juliana Pena. The winners are fighting each other. Done deal. So you're basically watching. So UFC 307 is kind of the semifinals for whenever those winners face each other.
I don't want to smear the name of Pennington, but when I look at her and Harrison, I feel like that's like five divisions apart. Size-wise.
I wonder what the odds would be. Like, let's say they both win on Saturday. I could see Kayla Harrison, the challenger, being a minus 500 favorite.
Raquel Pennington. I think Harrison could be 165 and not look fat, and Pennington would have no problem getting down to 125.
There was a serious concern that Kayla Harrison would make it to 135. Like, she was
ripped
at 55. They're crazy, man. These combat sport athletes that have been grappling their entire lives and just like know how to weight cut. It's nuts. It's wild what these guys can do.
Well, you know, as they try to build the biggest stars possible, Pajada, you know, right now is not an English speaking guy, and it's worked in the past with guys like that. His skills are crazy. He's another one. I can't believe he can get to, well, middleweight's crazy, but he's going to fight light heavyweight here. Khalil Roundtree's a big dude for that weight. Pad is a big favorite, isn't he? Like minus 800.
That big? I don't know. He's a big favorite, and rightfully so. But the thing is here, though, like Khalil Roundtree, he's never attempted a takedown in the UFC. Even like kickboxers don't do. Like even like guys that are like credentialed, you know, strikers. Like even then, they mix in a takedown every now and then, right? Like it's mixed martial arts. Like you gotta try it every now and then. Yeah, I think Pettis is like a minus 550. So that's a very, very big favorite. But it's like the things that we all assume Pettis can't handle, that's not what Roundtree does. Like this is a pure striker's delight. I mean, when it comes to like, it should be Magomed Ankalaev fighting Alex Pettis. People are saying, who's Magomed Ankalaev? I'm like, yeah, exactly. That's why he's not. And it's Khalil Roundtree, who's on a 5-fight win streak with 4 knockouts. But this is the consolation for it not being like the true number one contender, at least in my humble opinion. Is you get arguably the most violent fight you can put together in mixed martial arts. Khalil Roundtree is the type of dude who will throw, it's a legal kick, it's not illegal. He throws this kick, it's like a front kick to your front kneecap that turns your leg into a reverse boomerang. And there was like a big controversy after he did that to a fighter and broke his leg, where it's like, oh man, that's bad sportsmanship. Oh, that's not martial arts. Oh, that's too brutal. It's like, you got MMA fans. Fans who watch cage fighting clutching their pearls and saying, I don't know, this is too brutal for my sport. That's how violent Khalil Roundtree is. You make fight fans say, oh, no, 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 my moon and stars, that's just too brutal for this fine pugilistic endeavor. That's a crazy guy.
Yeah. So we're while I love Merab and what he did to drive, you know, the matchmakers crazy and what he's going to do to drive him crazy trying to find the next fight, these two guys are going to go at it. There's going to be offense, a lot of offense.
It is about as violent of a fight you can put together, right? You got Alex Pajada, who's the best kickboxer in mixed martial arts, knocked out Israel Adesanya, knocked out Jamal Hill, knocked out Jiří Procházka twice, and then you've got Khalil Roundtree Jr., who's 5-fight win streak, 4 knockouts, and he'll just like... He does like soccer kicks to the body and like spinning hammer fists. It's just like, I feel like he has like a violence coach. You know what I mean? Like that's not MMA. That's just like 3 a.m. at the Waffle House, but technical. It's fun. Yeah.
All right, RJ. Well, congrats to your Raiders. We'll catch up with you next week. When's the next pod drop?
Thursday mornings, as always. If you're a member, if you are a member on YouTube, you get early access to it at the Auto Windbags. But yeah, Thursday morning on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
See you, pal.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, RJ Clifford. Griffin, are you fired up? Are you rodding up over the main event? I know you're going to the card, right, in Salt Lake?
Yes, sir. I will be there. And honestly, just listening to RJ talk about it got me even more pumped up. I'm personally somebody who wants to see Alex Pereira take on the best of the division and take on a guy like Magomed Ankalaev, not because I want to see Pereira lose, but because I want to see Pereira face all the challenges in the division. But, you know, even though we're not getting that matchup against Khalil Browntree, this is going to be a crazy, crazy fight.
Lions and Seattle just kicked off about 5 minutes in. That one is scoreless. Willie, what do we got with Miami and Tennessee? We talking 6-0?
6-0 Titans, 8:20 left in the second quarter. Miami's got the ball. Not really getting much going on offense. Tennessee holding its own down in Miami Gardens. And they have – Miami's got 36 yards of offense, 12 plays.
I guess Tua's pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Slightly.
Got two games here tonight. Front Yard, great place to watch it. It's Ellis Island, Koval, and Flamingo. This weekend on Saturday, Griffin would normally be here. This is now his spot. I've just named it a spot for UFC 307, but he's going to be in Salt Lake. But, yeah, UFC 307, I think Ray. I think superstar salesperson Ray is going to be out here. He's very big. I have to get his – I can't remember his Instagram address, but you can follow him. He's a very entertaining guy. But I know he's going to be out here. They have a great setup for UFC. This screen behind me is awesome for a UFC fight. So everything that maybe people were disappointed with the action and violence level of 306, you're going to get it in 307. So check it out tonight or Saturday. This is a great spot to watch all sports, great specials. We'll tell you more about the specials coming up for and the giveaways for tonight's Monday Night Football as the games are on here at Front Yard.
Hanging out at Ellis Island, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Lions about to go in. Jahmyr Gibbs from like 18 out hit the line. I think he was like, what is this? It was just this gaping hole. Got down to the two, and now they're at third and goal, trying to open things up, open the scoring up in Detroit and Seattle. So we'll see what the Lions do here. I'm just going to warn you now, if they're in a fourth and one situation, the right thing to do, not the aggressive thing to do, the right thing to do is punch it in. So we'll see what happens here on third down. So we've got, is that Montgomery? Montgomery in the backfield. He's in. That guy's great. At least when it comes to sniffing out the touchdowns on the goal line, he's awesome.
And the Lions, I mean, that's something that they've been doing the first few weeks. They found their rushing game. But tonight they came in a bit banged up on the line. So it didn't look like they're suffering too bad from it. Let's see, was his knee down? Nope, he held his knee off the ground, and he should get it. It should be a touchdown.
I'm going to do something here that's very dangerous.
I'm going to listen.
There was a run like that over the weekend where the running back basically catapulted himself from about the four and found a way to reach, like use his left hand to stay off the ground, kind of almost vertical or whatever it is. What's the same line?
Horizontal
to the ground, right? The ball's in his, I think it was in his left hand, is holding himself up. I think without question, he's the best running back in the country in college. And I actually think on the low end, and I was just kind of doing it by size. Watch what I do here. By size, I think he's like a Ray Rice type. Ray Rice was playing good football before. You know, he slowed down a little bit and had a little stuff with his girlfriend. Ashton Gentry at Boise is ridiculous. And I just want to, like, it's cool to get excited about UNLV. But they have to go through Boise at least once. They got to win at least once. That kid is freaking awesome. He eclipsed 250 in a game for the second time this year. I think it was Georgia Southern. He went for over 300. Willie, I'm telling you. And then as you watch run after run, here's the thing. No one can tackle him. Guys get – it's one of those dudes where you get – you tackle him by the thighs or like around the knees, mm-hmm. and you just slide off him. Now I'm going to go crazy, okay?
Okay.
Because of the size, he's the I'll just say he at times he looks like Barry Sanders. I know I did it.
I did it earlier.
You got to watch him. I know you do, but my Lord. And that Washington State team is not I think that's a team that could go, you know, finish the year with like three losses. They have a decent defense. They could not tackle the friggin' guy.
269, 197, 130, 259. Those are his net yards through the first four games.
What was the first one?
269 okay, so at Georgia Southern.
So two over 250.
197 at Oregon. 130 at home against Portland State. In a game, you have to imagine that once they were up, they probably laid back with his touches. And then 259 against Washington State. This week, Utah State. Next, then follow that in Hawaii and at UNLV. Imagine the hype. I'm calling for it now, Steve. If UNLV and Boise State go into that game undefeated. Oh, Boise State's not undefeated. But if they go undefeated leading up to that, meaning the next few weeks, and we have two top 25 teams, I want to see Reese Davis, Pat McAfee, and the boys outside Allegiant bring game day to Vegas. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, got to look at the schedule and where it fits, but yeah.
It's worthy of a conversation.
Keep in mind, last year, Genty got 21 carries against UNLV. George Helani got 20. I really thought they kind of saved Genty for the second half. Like, they opened things up and softened things up with a bunch of deep shots that they hit on. Yeah, I can't wait to see this UNLV defense, which is much improved and is playing well against a run, go against this guy and find a way to tackle him. He's awesome. I can't believe someone didn't, you know, we talk about NIL numbers. I can't believe someone didn't offer him, like, I don't even know who the highest paid running back is. Maybe it's the kid, whatever his name is, Judkins at Ohio State. He might make in excess of $1 million. Ashton Genty's one of the best running backs in recent times I've seen in college football. Just crazy.
Real quick, just to let y'all know, man, can I say that Genty, when they played high-ranked Oregon, he single-handedly kept them in that game. They ended up losing to Oregon 37-34, but 25 touches, 192 yards, three touchdowns. He kept them in that game against a ranked Oregon.
Yeah.
Insane.
Well, had their special teams not stunk in the game and given up scores, they'd probably be unbeaten right now and have a win over Oregon.
Genty leads the nation with 845 yards. The next closest person is Caleb Johnson from Iowa with 685. So that's 160 yards more than the closest running back to him.
I don't want him to beat UNLV. I don't want to see him have a big game against UNLV, but if he did and they make the playoff in the 12 hole, he probably still can't win the Heisman. He could rush for 2,000 yards, make the playoff, and I think they would still hold it against him with the level he's playing at, or the level he's, you know, it's group of five.
Yeah.
But he's awesome. And I have to say, on the other side, had he been able to pile up numbers with Matt Sluka at quarterback, Ricky White would be at least, you know, in consideration as a top 15 Heisman guy. Because what he's doing on special teams,
yeah,
is absolute insanity. So we're talking about the defense. Before we get to that, Willie, you saw Reese Davis was going off on the NIL thing with Matt Sluka?
Yeah, he just, you know, on game day, obviously was the big topic across the board, you know. And he basically said, it is probably true that he was promised something, likely, and it was not delivered. That's likely true. It is obviously true he did not have it in writing. If you make a dumb mistake in life, if I do, if Matthew Sluka does, or whoever, sometimes you have to wear that, man, and go in there and expecting something without writing, and then they don't give it to you. You can't just bail on the team. You've got to wear the fastball in the ribs sometimes and go, that was my bad.
And I'm telling you, from being on the sidelines and the emotion at the beginning of the game, I asked Jack Haas today, and we'll have the interview tomorrow. I did a one-on-one with him in the center. And I said, hey, what was that pregame speech like? And he was like, you know, most of the kind of fiery speeches and discussions happened during the week. But they came out of the tunnel and ready to play. And when they had an interception early, I was like, this is the most excited I've seen this freaking sideline. Like, they were so amped. And I think a lot of that was, we got to have Haj Malik Williams back. We're really pissed off about Matt Sluka. Someone had a sign up in the stands. Did you tweet that out too?
No, because
what happened?
It was funny, but it's kind of it's wrong. But go ahead, say what it
said. Basically, the sign was saying, you know, there's no I in UNLV, which actually the funny enough,
the collective's name is UNILV.
Yeah. So, so I knew there'd be some confusion there, but yeah. I think that was a lot of the attitude of the Rebels. They felt let down. They felt like the guy quit on them. You know, again, if I were a player, I'm not getting involved in anyone's money, you know, and their dealings on that, if whatever's true in that whole thing. But they were jacked. They're really fired up for that game, and obviously the fans were. I will tell you, I don't know if they ever got the sign. There was one player in the fourth quarter. We have a scoop and not a score, but the Lions are taking it back. Oop, I just jinxed it. Nope, tackle out of bounds. 7-0, end of the first quarter. Now the Lions are going to be set up at about the 20-yard line. Seattle turnover. But, what the hell was I saying? Oh, in the fourth quarter, a defensive player was pointing to the woman who was holding that sign, basically calling Sluka selfish, and was like, we need that sign. I didn't see if they got the sign, but they knew. They knew what the theme was. You know.
The motion.
It's not fun to feel like you got turned on.
Listen, if anybody wants to know how this team feels about what took place, one only need go to Ricky White's X page. End of story.
So the defense, my lord, won, and here's hoping nothing happens. You realize Jalen Catalan could not stay on the field the last couple of years. He was at Arkansas, went to Texas, just couldn't stay healthy. So far, he's been everything that he was looking like his freshman year. His freshman year, he was all SEC. Not honorable mention, he was first-team all SEC as a safety at Arkansas. He's playing some awesome football. I actually asked him at the press conference today about his interception, which was like an amazing catch that any wide receiver would be proud of. And I remember Caleb Herring saying what was great about the interception was a one-on-one play at the end of the first half down the sideline. Caleb's like, I don't think he saw the ball until the last second. So I asked the same question. I said, hey, when did you see the ball? And he's like, when I turned my head, there was this like orange blob coming at me. And I just put my hands up. I asked him if he played wide receiver in high school. He's like, nope, didn't play wide receiver. I was like, okay, where do you get those kind of ball skills and be able to toe touch? So that was tremendous. He was a Mountain West Conference Defensive Player of the Week, and he's got 4 interceptions now for the season.
And the notes you have here, I mean, think about this. Cam Oliver, interception, 11th of his career. Jonathan Baldwin, INT, 2nd of the season, 5th of his career. Jeremiah Vessel, team's 4th interception. With the 4 picks, the Rebels have now forced at least one turnover in 17 of the 18 games under defense coordinator Mike Shrier. But here's the thing. What's important to note is 4 picks. What was the big threat coming into this game? Wasn't Fresno State supposed to have a vaunted passing offense?
I think he's right now I'm losing confidence, but I thought he was the best quarterback coming back in the conference, Mikey Keene. And they're dangerous, man.
And
they got great receivers.
He still could be. It's just that maybe UNLV has the best defense.
And that's what I was saying about 2 hours ago. I'm like, you know what? I was trying to be real apprehensive about looking at a season where they could, you know, only lose 1, 2, 3 games. That sent a message. And it's the way they did it because that is always a great offense. I'm telling you, I was looking at the receivers. I'm like, okay, Jalen Moss beat him up last year. One of the kids was like 6'3", 6'4". He's been dangerous. Freeman. Their tight end was big. He was a weapon. I think he had one good catch in the game, but they shut it down. And then there's little things like the special teams blocking a punt, scooping and scoring it. First kickoff return, I think since 2012 for a touchdown, by the third string return man, because DeJesus is one. They've got another guy, D'Angelo Urban Jr., in between him, and Jet Thomas returns it for a touchdown. One of the questions coming into the year, and this is one of the reasons I was like, I don't know if they can go better than 8-4. Jose Pisano at kicker was awesome.
Yes.
And they've rolled a true freshman out there from, you know, right across town at Faith Lutheran. Mm-hmm. And you watch Caden Chittenden is like, for a freshman, is cool as a cucumber. I mentioned before, the guys in the past, like, I would always be by the net, and I'd be like, and, you know, I'd walk in front of the net like an idiot, and they're like trying to, they would practice. I mean, Gutierrez and Pisano, they 75 kicks during the game. I never see Chittenden practicing. He'll do it a little bit to stay loose, and he goes out there. He's banging field goals left and right. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
And I will say, Las Vegas has been known to produce some exceptional. There are, because you know what? There are some really good kickers in town, or some kicking coaches, special teams coaches. And a lot of the former kids come back to town to become teachers, like PE teachers or whatever, or just go. But they coach. And I can't think of the guy's name for the life of me, but he was a longtime older guy from Arbor and also in Rancho. And I think he went to Rancho, but he produced some incredible place kickers out of Southern Nevada. And they'd go play, you know, whether it be Big Sky, FCS schools, or some group of five places. But Vegas has been known for to have some, you know, to produce five, six place kickers per class. So not surprising. And, you know, it just goes to show that it's not just about the offense that everybody was raving about last season and during the offseason and, you know, putting it all on one emphasis. This is a collective effort that this team is putting out there. We're seeing a dominating defense. We're seeing a debilitating special teams at times. We're seeing a powerful run game. Christ, coming in, everybody was talking about the passing game, the go-go, the speed, the this, the that. They're 125th in the nation. Last week, they were 116th. They're now 125th out of what, 132 teams?